Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. We still have the late signing period to discuss, but this is roughly the time I turn the page and do my initial rankings and my initial deep dive into the class of 2021 in the state of Oregon. Joining me to talk about that are Jordan Johnson and Alex Linenkohl. Alex Linenkohl does stuff with Line Pro. He works with a bunch of linemen in the state of Oregon from kind of all ages, really. Now it's expanding, but previously has worked with most, I think it's fair to say, most of the Power 5 conference level recruits, even the FCS recruits. You've kind of specialized working with those, so I wanted to have you in because it's going to come up in 2021 because you've got some experience with some of those kids. Jordan Johnson does a little bit of everything, and since your title's always changing, what do you do now?
Hang out with you.
Yeah, something with Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Pro Football Hall of Fame, Battle Prep. I represent Oregon and Washington for National Preps, which is one of the two largest recruiting sources for D1s in America. So, yeah, a bunch of different things.
2021, it's funny because 2020 was a year that when those kids were eighth graders and freshmen, we went, oh, this is going to be the greatest group maybe in the history of Oregon. And some of it was entitlement. Some of it was lack of development. A lot of reasons. It ended up being an actually fairly average class. It wasn't really down. Guys like Casey Filkins, Andy Alfieri did a great job of developing themselves and kind of rose, and they weren't the guys that we thought would be 1, 2, 3, 4 years ago, but they became very solid 1, 2, 3s. Casey Filkins scores in the All-American Bowl and really became the class headliner with Alfieri being hurt. 2021's a group that didn't get a lot of hype, and as it gets closer, it's not super deep, but there are some really impressive kids. I came out with a top six because that's about where I'm at with guys who I think have proven that they are Power 5 offer kids. But there is another 20 to 30 who are really solid. We'll get to my top six. I want to go over all of those guys individually. But I don't know if you got a chance to see my list, but do you have anybody that didn't make my top six that you are really enamored with? Alex, we can start with you.
Yeah, I saw the list, you know, and what I liked is that you listed off guys that could have been on there, and I think you nailed that. And then the fact that those guys weren't on the list, I thought was about fair as well. So, you know, when I reviewed it, I thought it was nicely done, and I wouldn't have done it different. And the fact that you did six guys really just fits because, you know, you could have said, oh, let's do 20, and you would have been grabbing it at straws at the end of it, you know, to come up with more guys. So at this point, there's always guys that haven't shown themselves yet that appear. You know, I've got my eyes out, but it does seem like a pretty small group as far as that real Power 5.
Jordan, where's your cut line for guys who you think are Power 5, and then who'd I leave out, or where do you have a disagreement with the list? Because you almost always do.
Yeah. Yeah, so I go pretty deep when I release, you know, by position, and you take a kid like Trent Walker, 6'3", 190, first-team all-league kid, both sides of the ball. I think he could end up being a Pac-12 type kid. You just don't know. The line, I think, is super intriguing. You take a Charlie Picard out of a Jesuit, 6'5", 255. He's got the size. First team kid, both sides of the ball, moves extremely well, fundamentally sound. At Jesuit, he could end up being a big time kid. Keenan O'Donnell, Thurston kid, 6'5", 300. He's a defensive guy, but he is a freaking monster on the interior. So based on these sides, we could go Shane Schwake, 6'8", 275, Holden Whipple, 6'5", 280. There's a bunch of intriguing kids that I really like. A Colt Musgrave out of Bend, who's playing linebacker. He's got really good linebacker film. People think of him as a quarterback for obvious reasons. But there's a lot of kids that you don't necessarily know right now, which makes it a little more interesting. This offseason is going to be telling. Size-wise, though, by the position, There's potential, which makes it a little more fun.
And one thing I want to be clear on, because I got a number of messages yesterday when that list comes out, as you always do, if you're making an argument for a kid, particularly this year, that like, okay, he doesn't belong in the top six, but he should have been among the guys you listed in the also, like the also receiving votes, honorable mention, whatever. That doesn't mean a whole lot. There's a, you could pick 70 players and put them in the also receiving votes category, and they have a chance to pop. I'm not discounting those kids as not being talented by any stretch. I just don't think they're proven. So if you're trying to argue like he has a chance to pop, my answer most of the time is going to be, sure, he does. But these are the six that are proven, and these are guys that are in that cluster that people are talking about as we want to see a little more, or he needs to get a little stronger, or if he grows a little bit. That's what I was trying to do with that kind of honorable mention block of 15 to 20. But if you've got a kid in a 4A school and you say, hey, this kid's dominating and he's great, and if he gains 20 pounds of muscle, I'm okay with that. And if you want to pretend he was on the list, go ahead, because there's a huge group of kids that could pop. It's so early that this is not by any stretch written in stone. Although I will say the six kids that are on this list are pretty solidly proven commodities at this point. And for me, it starts with Hood River Valley's Henry Buckles. It's funny because it's one of those things with Oregon small football where the position he's playing right now is not where he's going to end up, especially with the way line play has worked. If you look at the size and how recruits have changed at the Power 5 level, one of the major trends in college football right now is that interior linemen are getting bigger and they're getting taller. It used to be that the average interior lineman, particularly center, could be 6'1", 6'2", 6'3". That's becoming 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", at center. So Henry is up against it a little bit size-wise at 6'2". He's definitely not a tackle anymore. You can almost not be a tackle if you're 6'2". I see him sliding inside, potentially being a guard, but I actually like him at center. And I think he could be a Power 5 kid at center. Lenny, I know you're close with him. Am I crazy that Henry Buckles to me, and particularly on film, he's got a thrower background where he's a good thrower. I see a lot of technique. I see a lot of ability where he's going to be very technically sound and potentially be a Power 5 center.
Yeah, you know, Henry is just a great kid. You know, he listens so well. He's a natural learner, and then he's worked so hard at the learning that he's become an abnormal learner, you know. And I think when he goes to camps, coaches see that, which has really kind of fueled some of the recruiting with him and with anybody. I've always pushed patience. In the world of linemen, it's so different from skill positions. And I, you know, obviously people don't like to say skill positions and stuff when they're pro linemen, but that's what everybody calls them. So skinny positions, I say. But you know, you can look at these running backs and quarterbacks, and you can see that an eighth grader, ninth grader is going to be just a really, really good football player. But for linemen, it just takes time and work. And, you know, what we've seen is that sometimes when someone has maybe the frame as an eighth or ninth grader, they get a lot of attention. And then maybe they don't put that really, really gritty work in. And, you know, for me, I was almost 6'2", you know, a roster 6'2", 6'1", and like 7'8". And Henry, he's a solid 6'2". You know, see a lot of guys say 6'2", because they know that's the minimum, you know. So they'll be 6'1". Maybe, and they'll put 6'2". So, but Henry is a pretty solid 6'2". And he's just done such an amazing job of working and working and working. And the work that he's put in track, I mean, he could be a major, major D1 track guy, even more than football. He's nationally ranked. And when you watch him throw, he just uses his feet and hips so well. And that transfers amazingly to football. So, I'm excited to see him continue to develop, and I'd be surprised if he didn't start getting offers.
Patrick Hizotaki, I have at number five. For a long time, he said he was a DB. He went to camps as a DB, and it was just one of those things where you're like, dude, you're 6'5", 210 pounds, put on 20 pounds and go be an outside linebacker. And he fought it for a while, and now he is an outside linebacker. Last night, I guess last night as of recording, but he's last week picked up an offer from Maryland. Patrick Hizotaki to me is really, really intriguing. I think he's a kid that could end up being a national recruit because of that potential to be 6'5", 235, and fluid. He's going to fit in a lot of systems. Whether you run a 4-3, a 3-4, every program's going to say, I have a fit for an athletic 6'5", 235 guy. I think he could really rise. The thing he needs to take care of, and it's so loud that I have no problem saying it publicly, every time I ask about him, someone brings up work ethic. And when it's that loud and it's all the way from college down to high school, down to teammates, that's something to work on. And he says he's dedicated to fixing it. He says he's not totally sure where it comes from. He's been very polite to me whenever I've talked to him. I have no personal qualms about who he is as a person at all. But he needs to show leadership. He needs to make sure on the recruiting trail he's being very respectful of the process. But I think there's potential if he adds the weight and becomes a leader of that Clackamas team and steps up and they erase that work ethic question, which when you add 15 pounds of muscle in the last year, you're at least taking care of some of that. I think he's got a chance to be a four-star prospect in the end because that frame's so intriguing. Jordan, am I crazy?
So he was originally listed as a DB because he's that athletic. He can play DB at 6'5", 235, which tells you something.
It's freaky.
So that said, it's still unproven. I mean, great kid. I mean, phenomenal kid. You got the Maryland offer. They don't just hand those out. So very good football player. That being said, there's a handful of guys or a couple of guys that right now, me personally, I would have ahead. Carson Cota, for example, go watch his film. He has his hand on the ground playing a DN spot, but he's so athletic and so physical. 6'4", 235, last name's Cota. I like him a lot. And anybody can go watch the film and judge for themselves. Anthony Pugh out of West Salem, who was hurt this last year, one of the top three or four recruits in the state overall, regardless of position, hurt his junior year, first-team All-League as a sophomore, brothers at Air Force, 6'4", 210, along with Carter Newman, first-team All-League kid out of Sheldon, played DN, outside linebacker. I bring these three guys up because they're so versatile. DN, outside linebacker, if you put weight on them, that's probably where Patrick will end up. At the collegiate level, my point is you have a handful of guys where one has an offer, which was just yesterday, but I think there's a bunch of kids in that class, the kids I just mentioned, that will have Division I offers. And when this is all said and done and we break this list down 6 months from now or whatever, I think it's going to look completely different. That's my two cents.
I want to get to the top four, but first we got to take a break. So we will give you the top four, including the nation's number one inside linebacker, two kids who are already evaluated as D1 basketball and football recruits, which will lead into a discussion of multi-sport athletes. And then, of course, Jefferson's record-breaking running back, Demir Collins. All of that coming up next on 1080 The Fan. Breaking down the class of 2021 in Oregon, it's early, it's fluid, but we've already given you two players we think are Power 5 conference prospects, potentially Henry Buckles out of Hood River Valley. I think he slides inside and is an intriguing center, particularly with his technique. He's an elite thrower. Patrick Hizataki out of Clackamas picked up an offer from Maryland last week. That's already Power 5, so he's locked in at that spot. Drew Carter, the quarterback from Tigard, interests me, and I don't have necessarily a list that is ranked 1, 2, 3, 4. These are six guys I like. I think it gets a little bit more. The top three, I think, is pretty clear, and this bottom three for me is more of a chunk. Drew Carter already has a Division I basketball offer. He may end up being a basketball kid. I do think he's the top-rated quarterback in the state of Oregon. He is starting to pick up interest. He's up to 6'2", 6'3", 185, 190. I don't know which one of you wants to take it. Jordan Johnson or Alex Linenkolb both joining us. What say you guys about Drew Carter?
I mean, he started as a freshman at Tigard, where freshmen don't start. So he is a phenomenal athlete. He had 49 points in a basketball game the other day. I mean, he's just that dude. I mean, super athletic, 6'2 and a half, 6'3". Provides that versatility where collegiate programs, obviously, that's just so appealing from a recruiting standpoint. So Drew's going to have options. He's got Nevada. He's gonna have plenty more. I think with him, I don't know exactly what he wants to do. He's that good at basketball. He could go play basketball at a high level school. He's got Portland State's offered him. So we'll see. But once again, another group of QBs where you got four or five other kids with size that are 6'4". A couple of them, like a Blake DeBishop, didn't play because he was playing behind Ethan Coleman. Blake DeBishop has a a rocket, just flings it. You know, we'll see what he does for the number one ranked team in the state next year.
Wes Lynn has a group of guys who very easily could pop. And it's Gavin Haynes, who's a running back, outside linebacker, strong safety, Mitchell Dewey, who's a tight end, and Blake DeBishop. All three of those guys are right on the edge of exploding and being big time kids. It's going to be interesting to see who in that program, because inevitably someone seems to, who's going to pop in that program. I agree with you on Blake DeBishop, really intriguing kid.
Jack Artman, Clackamas, played behind Austin Atkinson. No one knows about him. Watch out for him. J.J. Wooden, Lake Oswego, and Jackson Lowry, West Salem. West Salem's going to be a top 10 team. I just want to say that right now, next season. They bring back a bunch of kids along with Holden Whipple, a line that looks really good. You got a line, you got a shot. So I like the group in general. Once again, another very intriguing position for the 2021 class.
This will surprise a lot of people, and I'm okay with it because I think I'm okay here. I've actually got Demir Collins at number three. I know he's a four-star prospect on 24/7 Sports. My number two is a teammate of his, Nathan Rawlings Kabongi. Nathan is already committed to Washington State for basketball. He's 6'7". 245 pounds. He is raw on film, but his game one film is terrible compared to what he was at the end of the year. He got a lot better. I just don't think you can teach extremely uber athletic 6'7", 245. He's already picked up multiple Pac-12 offers, and that's with a kid who's just picking up football. He could be, if we're looking at it 5 years from now, he could be, with that frame and that athleticism, the guy with the highest ceiling of anyone in the state of Oregon. Again, 6'7", 245, and freaky bounce, freaky athlete. Right now, if I was doing a draft of top high school football players, he probably wouldn't make my team. If I was doing a draft of, like, I want an all-state team, or he wouldn't make it. If I was doing an all-prospect team, he'd be one of my first picks. I think there's a lot of room to grow. The frame's intriguing. The athleticism is intriguing. And then Demir Collins, he's already got offers from Oregon, Oregon State, number two all-purpose back in the country. That sounds really, really good, and it is to some extent. But if you look at the last 6 to 7 years of 24/7 doing all, like, ranking all-purpose backs, often the number one guy is extremely good. He's like an undersized LaMichael James type. Which is oversimplifying, but bear with me here. And once you get into 2, 3, 4, and 5, even in the all-purpose rankings, it's very hit or miss. Some of those guys end up being stars. Sometimes they end up really not panning out, and we're still yet to be determined, but a recent example of that, Trey Lowe was the number 5 all-purpose back in the country out of the state of Oregon. Went up to Washington, kind of in between wide receiver, running back, more of maybe a slot receiver. Didn't pan out there. He's walking on at Oregon State. He's got a chance there to end up being something special and kind of turning it around, but it speaks to my point that just because you're a top 5 all-purpose back in the country doesn't mean you're a top 5 running back in the country. It's a very different thing. So I think Demir's got a chance to be great. I could also see potentially as a floor, kind of the Trey Lowe situation. Goes to a high-level school, has a hard, is he a running back? Is he a slot? And ends up not being able to fit. So he's going to have to be really smart about his recruitment and pick an offense that knows how to utilize him and wants to utilize his skill set properly. If he does that, I think he's got a chance to really pop, but also he's a little bit of a risk reward. Both these guys are, frankly. Lenny in general, Nathan Rawlings, Kabongi, what say you about D linemen and learning technique when they've got that kind of athleticism? How high is the mountain to climb for him there?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to go from 0 to 100, you know, but that's not to say that it can't be done, because I've seen guys learn quickly. You know, some guys take longer than other guys to learn, but you know, in just a matter of weeks of really, really detailed coaching and repetition, it'd be really hard not to see somebody improve. So, you know, I haven't really got eyes on this kid, but looking at the frame, and then I saw them play. We covered one of the games when I was doing color commentary. And yeah, I mean, he's a freak. And, you know, if you can harness that, then you can read the ceiling's really high, like Julius Peppers type stuff.
You know? I mean, it's NFL all pro high.
Yeah. And a coach is going to see him and be like, and then they watch the film. They're going to say, could we teach him the rest of what he needs to know? You know, and a lot of it is skill, knowledge, muscle memory, reaction without even thinking, right? So you have to do it a lot. And then just knowing the game, you know, understanding the X's and O's and the situations and when you can really pass rush or play the run and stuff like that. So it's a lot to learn, but I believe that it could be done rather quickly.
And my bigger thing is not even necessarily that he is. I'm not betting whether or not he is or isn't going to figure it out. When you do prospect ranking, it's will a college coach or will high-level college coaches believe they can make him reach that ceiling? And I guarantee a number of schools are going to say, we will take that kid and we will turn him into something. And because of that, I think he's going to have more opportunity than Demir Collins, who's very, very good. But given his size limitations, I think there are going to be fewer schools who believe that's a high, high ceiling kid. And that's why I have Kabongi ahead of Collins. But that doesn't necessarily mean I think that, in fact, for sure, Collins right now is a much better football player. My personal opinion. Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, with Nathan, I mean, there's a lot of variables there with Washington State and hoops, but he could easily be the most offered kid in this class. 6'7", 250, you can't teach that. And what they do at the next level, they can turn you into what they want to turn you into when you're that athletic and that big. So I could easily see him being the number one prospect in this class.
Ahead of Keith Brown, even.
Ahead of everyone.
And he's the number one inside linebacker in the country. And I agree with you.
Yeah. So, I mean, his teammate, Jason Davis, another kid, since we're talking Demir, you know, that's a kid as a backer, Jason Davis and a Diami Rios, two inside linebackers that are two other Division I kids at what level, who knows right now. But once again, it's so intriguing, this class, where 2020 were like, a few years before that, we were like, this is going to be the number one class ever. This one, size-wise, I mean, potential-wise, I think is even bigger and better potentially. And that's what makes this next year so intriguing.
The number one kid in the state, according to most rankings, again, I think you and I both feel that Nathan Rollins Kabongi could end up being ahead of him, is Keith Brown, the number one inside linebacker in the country on Rivals. He's now number three on 24/7 Sports. He just got invited to the Adidas All-American Bowl. He's committed to Oregon. I really like Keith Brown. I think he's physically a talent. I think he was a nationally ranked wrestler, I guess, when he was younger, it sounds like. I mean, a big time talent. I still feel, and he's going to get it at Oregon. He'll work with Justin Flo and Noah Sewell, and he'll learn some things from those guys. I think he has a lot to learn still about the linebacker position. When I watch his film, I see the athletic freakiness. It's one of the reasons every camp he goes to, he makes all combine everywhere. Every time he goes to a camp, somebody points him out and is like, that's the freakiest kid here, or one of the freakiest kids here. You watch his film, and technique-wise, hands-wise, like I would love to have him work with Brett Haberle, because he was so good with his hands, the former Oregon linebacker still in the state. He still has a lot of technique things to work out. Again, love the athleticism, similar to Kabongi a little bit, although he's more of a finished product. But I still see a big gap between his athleticism and what he produces on the field on Friday nights. Not a criticism. Think he's great. Think he's a four-star prospect. But he's not as developed as a Noah Sewell or a Justin Flo in terms of, man, that kid really understands football at a high level. There's still work to be done there.
Yeah, I mean, unless there's some super high level former player that's been working with them, or is, you know, a family member, if you're in a smaller area in any state, but especially a state like Oregon or Washington, especially Oregon, you might not have access to the very best, top notch, highest level coaching. They've got to, you know, they do a great job, all these schools, year after year, they produce a good product. But if you're going to be competing with guys from Florida, California, Alabama, Texas, I mean, you really have to understand the ins and outs of the X's and O's. And again, a guy can learn, and he will learn when he gets to college. And like you said, college coaches, they say, can we teach this guy? Yes. But does he know right now? And does it show up on the field? Maybe not. You know, I haven't reviewed him a lot, but if you have that freaky athleticism, then, you know, you can go and show that at camp. Then they say, yeah, we're going to teach him football better. But, you know, so that's where, being from Lebanon, I could see where he might not have that yet.
So with Keith, I agree with you almost 100%, Andrew, because on film, like the recent combine he was at, he looks like a freak. I mean, his overall athleticism, his ability, it's like, dude, this kid. And then you watch his film, and I got a lot of questions. And when I got questions watching you play Oregon 5A football, that's a problem. He's in the same conference as Talanoa Hufanga. Talanoa had no questions. And when you watch him at USC or you watch what he's doing and what he's going to do collegiately, I still don't have any questions. I have questions with Keith Brown. And Oregon 5A football is not competitive. I mean, it is so far from Division I. I mean, that's just brutal honesty. So I think it's important that we keep it in context, because there shouldn't be any question marks if you're the number one ranked linebacker in the country and we're watching 5A football film. Okay, that's my problem. So, I once again, great kid, but let's really, like, once again, keep this in context, because this next year's film better be unreal, because there's just not a lot of competition. Love Henry Buckles. Love him. I mean, great kid. But once again, playing 5A football at Hood River in a conference that just isn't good. So, I think it's important to keep all that in context. And when you're a collegiate guy, you got to look at that. I know we hear it all the time, right? Well, who are they playing against? Well, this is like the epitome of who are you playing against.
Your point about Talanoa versus Keith is really good and interesting, because I've heard it from college coaches saying, yeah, we like Keith. Talanoa was there and he was a killer, and it shows on film. Keith doesn't quite yet. And again, I think he's a great athlete, and I think he's got potential. I think he's got a really high ceiling. This isn't like some bashing Keith. I have him as the number one kid in the state right now. But when you're hearing it and you're saying it and I'm seeing it on film, it's like the film doesn't match the athleticism. A lot of times coaching can close that gap, but it's a bigger gap than I think most people realize. And if you're hearing any experts say, look at his film, he's a killer, they don't know how to watch film, because he doesn't look like a killer yet on film. It has not translated to pads yet. But again, going to Oregon should help him. Noah Sewell is there. He's a killer. Justin Flo's there. He's the best linebacker to come out of California maybe in 20 years. Working with those guys, they'll help close the gap as well. I think Oregon's a good fit for him, but I can also see the argument, and I see it myself. And again, I've heard it from college coaches. If he's really the number one linebacker in the country, he should be doing on film what Talanoa was doing on film starting as a sophomore. And Keith still isn't, and he's through his junior year. That's the class of 2021. I want to talk about multi-sport athletes and 7-on-7 in Oregon. Last year in the class of 2019, I don't think any of the top 6 or 7 kids in Oregon consistently played 7-on-7 football. This year, we've got Nathan Rollins-Kabangi and Drew Carter, who are going to have choices to make. Henry Buckles, also a choice to make based on his track and field prowess. What do you guys think of multi-sport athletes? I think we're all in agreement that it's a positive thing, but I want to get into that. So we'll talk about that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. We just broke down the class of 2021 top prospects in the state of Oregon. Joining me in the studio is Line Pros Alex Linenkohl. The name sounds familiar. He was a pretty dang good center for Oregon State there for a while. And Jordan Johnson from Pro Football, from the Pro Football Hall of Fame and Battle Prep West and everywhere. He does everything. It comes up, we're talking about multi-sport athletes, and it bleeds into kind of 7-on-7 in Oregon. Last year in the class of 2019, I think none of the top 6 or 7 kids consistently played 7-on-7 football in the state of Oregon, and multi-sport athletes. And we've got a number of them here that are very, very good in multiple sports. Henry Buckles is an elite track and field guy. Drew Carter, the Tigered quarterback, and Nathan Rollins-Kabangi, the 6'7", 245, 250-pound D-lineman, is a Washington State commit in basketball. I think we're all pro multi-sport. Play multiple sports. The problem that I have with the discussion is I think it's getting morphed into from not specializing to almost like just have fun with it. You do need to, especially in the state of Oregon, you do need to hone your craft if you want to be as good as the kids in California and Texas and Florida. So when I hear play multiple sports, I immediately get an anti-7-on-7 or an anti-trainer component to it almost attached. And I think that's wildly wrong. I think even coaches who say play multiple sports are like, but I hope you're doing something to work on football year round, or I hope you're doing something to work on basketball year round. Lenny, where do you stand on multiple sport athletes and getting advanced training, particularly in a state like Oregon, where frankly, the competition isn't what they're going to see at the highest levels of college football or college basketball, college athletics?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when in doubt, multiple sports is going to be the better way to go compared to specializing. The little bit of a clarification that I would put is that specializing is okay if it's late enough in your career and you're focusing on your goals. But if you specialize as a sixth or seventh grader saying, oh, I'm going to focus on football or whatever sport, that's going to be a detriment, because the competitive nature that you build in these different sports, different situations, different types of cutting, movement, coordination. Myself, I did, you know, Little League baseball, basketball, and football. I did wrestling, taekwondo, you know, and then track. And then as a junior, I pared down to football only and hired the best strength trainer around. And if I didn't do all of those things I just mentioned in that order exactly, I would not have made it the way I did. You know, I was up against it just like a guy like Henry Ruckles. So, you know, you've got to make the decisions at the right time for yourself. So I would tell a guy, you know, especially when they're young, I would take the seventh grader who plays three sports, basketball, wrestling, whatever. Wrestling is phenomenal for linemen, over the kid that does, you know, 24 private lessons, even with me year round. I would take the wrestler.
Even with you.
Even with me, you know, I'm telling you. And there's parents who want to do it. Oh, we're not going to do basketball swing, folks. I say, well, you know, get them out there, keep them running around. It's good for conditioning. And most of these kids need to lose a few pounds, you know, so getting them running, that kind of stuff. But what I don't like is when I have a junior who tells me he wants to play Pac-12, and then he tells me that he's, you know, going to go and do lacrosse or track, or not, but track's good. Track I'm good with because the throwing, they can lift all that. But they do lacrosse or maybe golf. And it's like, you are missing out on training opportunities, visit opportunities, camp opportunities. And because you're out there swinging a golf club, and sure, if it's fun, I'm with it. But you're telling me you want to be all Pac-12, or I'm not all Pac-12, you want to go Pac-12. I've seen it. Kids with great potential end up going to lower level and they regret it.
Yeah, I do think there's a balancing act component. And again, it's wrong to say specialize. And I don't think any of us here are saying specialize, do not run track, do not play basketball, do 7-on-7 or private train. But also the people who are all in on multi-sport and like, don't focus on something. Well, you're going to have to focus at some point in order to be elite. That's just the way it works. And you look at a guy like Casey Philkins. Casey Philkins didn't play 7-on-7, but he did private training to work on his body and everything. So he kept it going year round. You look at Silas Starr, who I think everybody would say, you look at the rankings, he was a top 10 receiver nationally, dropped outside the top 100. He started training his body more, and I think he still ran track, or at least he did early. He started doing more private training, and then he kind of started to live up to all that hype this year, where first team all state, going to Stanford. You do need to do advanced work, and there's a difference between multi-sport, just go out and have fun, and do the multi-sport thing, but also whatever sport you want to be the best at, you might have to do a little bit extra, or else you're going to get left behind the kids who are doing multiple sports, but also making sure they get advanced teaching.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all about the multi-sport athlete. I almost concur with what Lenny had to say. Totally. These guys at the next level want versatility. Most likely, whatever position you're going to play, you're not going to be at that position. You know, you're one of eight running backs on a roster. You're one of this or that. I mean, so point being is versatility is everything. Getting there, especially at a young age, if you're specializing in sixth or seventh grade, not always, but that's usually going to be an issue if you want to continue to progress. Lenny, a long time ago, if you watched this high school film, you see a big lineman-looking dude that is the best linebacker in the state of Washington running around, number 74, something crazy like that, and he's a big man. And playing linebacker, he's just so athletic, but he's a big lineman looking guy, right? So it was really intriguing. But to his point, he did all that stuff when he was younger, and that helped him so much and allowed him to be a three-year all Pac-12 guy, stuff like that. So that's what I think Alex was getting at, is definitely continue to play other sports. Don't let anybody else tell you different until you get to a certain age where you're like, look, I know what I'm going to do. I need to progress. But like Casey Philkins did, keep working on your body, your craft. But I think specializing at a young age isn't necessarily good.
And it comes back to two things for me is you, the key to all of this is being able to really be self-aware of your potential. Like if you specialize because you want to be all Pac-12 or you want to be in Pac-12 football and you don't have the actual potential to do so, then you're making a mistake. You should play those multiple sports. You could have been a college wrestler, but you quit wrestling because you wanted to play football. It's like, it's too early to say. And then the other thing I'll just throw out there is I'm willing to say, at least from a lineman standpoint, that 90% of Oregon linemen who want to play college football fail to get in the weight room enough, period.
Yeah, there it is. Honest evaluation. And I cannot tell you how many kids, when these rankings came out, I got bombarded yesterday. I had all of discussion of 2020. There are kids who are unsigned, and we'll get to it in the next segment. There are kids who are unsigned who did a great job. There are kids who are unsigned who are tweeting like, man, still slept on. It's over. Like, no snooze button, no nothing. This is what you have. Commit to what you have or don't play sports. But you're not suddenly getting Oregon when your only offer is Western Oregon. Like, that's not how this works. And it's so frustrating that we don't have enough honest evaluation, and you're a hater or you're being slept on. When someone says you're a Big Sky kid, that means you're really damn good at football if you're a Big Sky kid. You look back and you look at a guy like Keegan Lawrence, right? Keegan? And Manu Rasmussen from Tigard. Those are two of the most dominant high school football players in Oregon we've had in the last 20 years. And those guys weren't Pac-12. They weren't even Mountain West. I mean, you can be really phenomenally good at high school football and still not be a high-level FCS or FBS guy, and that doesn't mean people think you suck. It's just the way it works. 7-on-7, something that a lot of people talk about when they do talk about specializing, and I just wanted to talk about the 7-on-7 culture in Oregon as a whole. I think it's broken. I've talked to somebody at 24/7 Sports. They said they're not going to cover 7-on-7 in Oregon. It's not worth the time. Last year, four or five years ago, I used to go to practice, because I'd end up with 10 recruiting stories interviewing Brady Breeze, Sam Neuer. You're going to have to help me. Elijah Molden, Anthony Adams, David Morris. I mean, it was the All-State team was there. I mean, literally, you'd get All-State matchup. And I'd have a rep that was like, oh, there's up and coming Chase Cota against Elijah Molden. Okay, all Pac-12 potential to go, or he decided to come back to Washington, but potentially an early draft guy against this kid who's supposed to be a top five receiver in the country in his year. Those were the consistent reps. And what I'm seeing now is this fractured kind of community-led 7-on-7 where it's like, we're the best kids from Eugene. Okay, well, we're the best kids from Medford. Well, we're the best kids from Salem. And it's like, yeah, so when you play the high school teams in Salem, yeah, you kick the crap out of them. No duh. Go to these tournaments, go to Pylon, and lose 42-0 in the first round. There's no value there. And I say this all the time. If you insulate in an area like Eugene or Medford, or even, gosh, even in conference in Portland, you can end up not getting consistent reps against future college prospects. If you're in the TRL and you're a corner, there's a good chance you had back-to-back weeks of going against Max Lindsay, Casey Tawa, and Thomas Dukart. Three Friday nights in a row. If you're at the 5A level, you can't give me three 5A receivers in general. Hand pick them where you're going to get reps against anybody week to week to week that are as good as any of those three. We're doing this wrong and we're fracturing it. I've heard of coaches hosting 7-on-7 tryouts and they just don't get it, frankly. They host a tryout and they think they're going to have a team and they go to host it and they end up with seven kids show up, seven kids from their high school, and no one else turns up. And they think they're going to have a 7-on team, and then they go, oh, we got to disband. That's happened in Oregon in the last 2 years. It's too fractured. We need an elite team to even have a chance. That old E-Force team made the Barton Football Academy team, made the Final Four. Since then, I think the best anyone's done is make it to the second round in any major tournament. And they get smacked, and it's not quality reps anymore.
So I think we met the first time when Taylor Barton and I were doing the 7-on-7 thing back in 2011 when no one was doing it. I mean, in the state of Oregon at least. And back in the day, we had one Oregon team and one Washington team.
Oh, my God.
We were loaded. We were loaded.
Dude.
You referenced it here. We went back-to-back years, got third out of 122, lost to Bishop
Beating,
Gorman.
Like, the Florida superstar teams right. And stuff. Yeah.
And that's with a lot of the individuals you referenced. And we got eighth out of 126 or something like that. Third and eighth out of 122, 126. That was with the individuals that you referenced. Rose Bowl, MVP, Brady Breeze, U-Dubs, Elijah Molden, OSU, David Morris, one of the best D1AA players in America, Anthony Adams. That was our secondary with quarterback Sam Noyer, Travon Bradford, Jacob Kaiser, Samori Torrey. We could go on and on and on. Point being.
And by the way, Samori Torrey, who's like completely forgotten, is just murdering people at Montana.
Right.
He's like breaking records.
Right.
And he's like the forgotten guy in that team.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. No scholarships. Anyways, we were spoiled a little bit. So now it's so watered down and it just is what it is. I mean, we can, you know, there's not much that is going to be done about it. I don't think it's just so watered down.
It's sad.
Yeah. So, up in Washington, FSP won the national championship in Vegas last year. So they are still pulling all the top kids to that organization, separate from Reggie Jones, who does a very good job with air football.
Yep.
Two really good programs. Anyways, it is watered down. It is what it is. I don't, you know, we can, I don't know if there's, I don't think it's going to change. So it just kind of,
yeah, I guess my greater point is if you're killing it on your 7-on-7 team in Medford and you're like, I'm torching these all league kids. Cool. Like, I don't know what to say. Like, you need these kids. If they want to be great, yes, play multiple sports. Yes, if you're going to get reps and get advanced reps, actually get advanced reps. Compete against other great players. Don't stick with just your community. Speaking to that E-Force team, Barton football team, they had kids on that team who would travel from Medford twice a week, three times a week, whatever it was, or once a week for practice and then all the tournaments because they knew that's where the advanced reps were. If you want to be great in Oregon, you can't just play the same neighborhood kids you've been kicking the crap out of your whole life. You might have to leave your comfort zone and come battle some TRL kids, rep in, rep out. And I just get tired of hearing, I'm the best kid on my 7-on team. Okay, how'd you do in your regional tournament? Oh, well, we didn't score and we lost by a combined score of 89-0. Okay, I'm unimpressed. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but these kids who are killing it in their local 7-on teams or their high school 7-on teams, come play in an all-star. If you're going to get advanced reps and you want to do that, do it against other elite kids. Don't just kick the crap out of the same kids and think you're doing something special because you're not. Tiger Shanks decided not to sign. He's hearing from the Big 12. He's hearing from the Pac-12. It is a tough decision to decide whether to sign during the early signing period or gamble on yourself and hope you rise in that big board reshuffle. We'll talk to Lenny and Jordan about making that decision and who it works out for and maybe who it doesn't next on 1080 The Fan. Joining me in studio, it's Line Pros Alex Linenkoll and Pro Football Hall of Fame, Battle Prep West, et cetera, et cetera. It's Jordan Johnson. Dude, I'm never going to get all the things you work for. you're getting paid by a lot of people to evaluate football and talk about football, so it's good to have you on. And we're talking about the early signing period is passed. The late signing period is currently ongoing. And around the country, there are a number of kids who elect not to sign during the early signing period. I'd say in the hopes of rising during the late signing period, but I think there's more to it than that. I think you need to do an honest evaluation. One of those kids is Lake Oswego offensive lineman Tiger Shanks. He chose not to sign during the early signing period. He had a few Mountain West offers, and he did it right because he's hearing from the Big 12 and Pac-12, and I think there's going to be a bidding war for this kid where he went from maybe Pac-12 preferred walk-on, we'll try to get him that way, to you're going to have to offer this kid a full ride to have any shot at him. He did it the right way. Linenkoll's familiar with him. I don't know that I would call you like his counselor in any way with it, but you know his situation. What went into Tiger Shanks' decision? And generally, when you're working with a lineman who's potentially thinking about, hey, I don't have the offers I want, should I wait? What goes into weighing that decision?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a game of musical chairs on both sides. So you know that schools are going to be going down their board as guys come off the board. And then for kids as well, you know, there's only so many scholarships out there, and then there's more offers than there are scholarships. So if you have offers, if you have an offer and you have the chance to take it in the early signing period, obviously it should be heavily considered. But the question I would ask, and the question I asked Tiger Shanks, is I said, you know, are you sure enough to make that decision now? Because if you're not, then wait. That's it. You know, wait, because you got to look at a guy and you got to be able to project based on his actual potential. If you think schools are going to come down from the higher levels and start looking or not. So if there was a kid that I didn't think could play at the higher level, and then I might have said, hey, you know, pull the trigger and have it done with, and let's start, you know, start getting ready for college. But for a guy like that, you know, I just think there's a lot more meat on the bone. You're still taking a major gamble. I told him, if you decide not to sign, you have to be ready to go the JC route if it falls through. And he said, I'm willing to do that if that's what it takes. But he wanted to, you know, push the envelope. And that's, to me, every situation is going to be different. But I would tell most kids to lock up the sure bet. That's yeah, where I was at
I think
as a player.
That's true.
You know, like don't count your chickens before they hatch, and take what you can get. But if you have a few options, that's where I would start to say you can be a little more flexible, because you know you can at least count on one of those being there at the end of the day.
The one caveat I think to anybody who's waiting is if you can, because if you're a 5-star, you can always wait, and somebody said, we'll take you, we'll keep your spot open because we want you. If you're a 3-star, sometimes there are programs that are lower level programs that are still very good, group of 5 programs. And if you can get a group of 5 program to tell you, and you trust them and you've got that relationship, we will hold this spot for you. We want you that bad. Then sometimes it's worth the gamble to see if a power 5 comes in. So if you can get that guarantee, and I'm not saying push for it, but if it happens somewhat organically, then you know you have that wiggle room versus I'm going to gamble on myself. And you're like, well, you're kind of a sloppy 340. Don't do that. But if you can get a program, and sometimes they'll do it. If you can get a program to lock you in and say, we like you enough, we'll hold the spot. Best of luck to you. We want the best for you. If you come back down to us, if you stay with us, we'll be thrilled. If not, good luck to you at the higher levels. That's a good thing.
On that front, you know, it doesn't have to be in plain terms. In Tiger's case,
that's a good point, yeah.
He booked some official visits for late January. So he knew he was going to be able to book those. So it's like that just bought him another month to just promote himself and talk to coaches. So if nothing comes up and he goes on an official visit, then he can commit, and then he's got 2 weeks till signing day. So, you know, you can kind of politic without having to call a coach and say, hey, can I use you as my backup option? You know what I mean? You don't really want to have that conversation exactly, but you can say, hey, can I book a visit for the end of January? I'm not going to sign now. You know, I want to kind of get your thoughts on that. They're like, oh, yeah, we're happy with you not signing. And we'd love to have you on the visit. And, you know, we just want you to play here. So you don't have to go and be explicit about it.
We'll let you have the final say, Jordan Johnson.
Nice, buddy. Yeah, that self-assessment part, I think, is just super important. Being, you know, your own worst critic. Because I agree with you, Lenny, what you said. I mean, if you got an offer and it's a good offer, you got to really think about it. You got to think, okay, you know, am I going to get better than this? Could I live in that city or town? What do I know about that school? Because it could be gone. I mean, they fill up those rosters pretty quick. If you hang out and just wait for something else, there's a good chance you're no longer going to have that offer. But Tiger, I love Tiger, man. I think he's a kid that is only going to get better. You see him in the gym dribbling a basketball, super athletic, 6'6", 330. I think his ceiling is super high, like NFL type high.
I do too.
And so if he was to go to a UNLV or a San Jose State, I think he's a guaranteed 3-year starter, a multi-year all-conference kid. I am guessing in the next month he lands a Pac-12 or a Big 12 or a couple of them.
I wonder strongly if Oregon State's not going to regret going on Tiger Shanks.
Yeah.
Because they have a hard time getting that size body.
100%.
And they have a hard time getting it on the recruiting trail. And he's sitting in your backyard and no one's offered him. And I think if they would have offered, I think with the relationship he has with his mom, I think there's a good chance, and family in general, I think there's a good chance he'd have wanted to stay close to home. They may end up regretting that because they don't grow on trees when they're that big.
Right.
I think in general, all these topics, one of the things that came up, whether it was class of 2021 rankings and kids getting mad, whether it was 7-on-7 and multi-sport, or whether it's waiting between the early signing period and late signing period, one thing we all agreed on, honest evaluation and self-assessment is a massive part of the recruiting process. If you have an inflated sense of what you where you belong, you're going to botch the recruiting process. It's as simple as that. You need to take criticism, learn where you can grow as a sophomore. Okay, what am I? Okay, I'm roughly Big Sky. What can I do to potentially move up? Okay, I'll work on that while also running track, while also playing basketball. Okay, I'm right on the cusp. Maybe it's time to specialize because I'm heading into my senior year. You have to do the honest evaluation and you have to be willing to take criticism without just dismissing it with I'm slept on or you're biased or you're stupid. You don't get it. Listen to people, take it in, not just from your buddy, not just from the 7-on-7 coach that desperately wants to add you on his team. Listen to people who know, and potentially your best way to do that is to go to camps and get exposure against other elite talent. That's it for this week's Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 10 to the Fan. Thank you, as always, for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.